And we are back with episode 423 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I always pick a fight with my fake wife to go off on a mission.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and anybody want to go running while we still have our legs attached?
And this is Ron Stone from Australia, and what happened to the days of people keeping lions and tigers and bears in their zoos?
Yeah, it's awfully complicated. All right, well, we are going to go ahead and cover the last few shows that we have left on our list for this week. But first, Edmund, if you could give a disclaimer, it would probably be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. We like to discuss just about anything we can think of in these episodes, so you will probably be horribly spoiled if you haven't seen them. But it's been a week or so we certainly hope you have.
That's right. And we're going to go ahead and... since it's the only show left on the list that Gary actually watches, we're going to go ahead and cover Lost Girl. So here's the promo.
She doesn't want our protection dice, and she doesn't even want to see us.
Sunday on Showcase.
She locked us out. We're taking a case.
I'm so glad you guys could help.
We should never have taken this case. Kenzie, you need to get out of there.
Please, call me Rainer.
I went dark for you.
Rainer will ask you to slay the Unamens.
You have broken our laws again, Succubus. Captured her friends.
Lost Girl. New episode Sunday at 10. Exclusively on Showcase, where character is everything.
Okay, Gary, why don't you do the recap for us?
Sure, we're talking about Lost Girl. Season 3, episode 10, Waves. The gang react to Bo's shocking announcement and take on an undercover mission at a mysterious corporation. Meanwhile, Bo retraces the steps that may lead her to her destiny. I gave this a 7.
Okay. And Bronson, how about you?
I gave this one a 7, too.
Okay.
A 7 as well, I should
yes,
say.
Yes, there you go. And how about you, Edmund?
I will also give it a 7.
Boy, we're just average all around on this one, aren't we? Okay, yes. Well, Gary, why would you say that this was an average episode?
Well, you know, I've come to dislike the separating Bo from the rest of the group. I don't enjoy those episodes as much. I like the character interaction. So that being said, we have Bo with this mysterious guy who, I have to admit, I still don't quite have a handle on him, who he is, mm-hmm. what he does. They've told us, but it's not sinking in for me. So I'm having a hard time really understanding him, their connection, or what he means to her. So it just strikes me as odd. Now the B story, I guess, if you want to call it, I felt was more of the main story. It was, you know, with Kenzie and going finding the mermaids, for lack of a better term, and their insane desire to get people's legs. I found that to be a lot more fun and entertaining. That, and then finally the... I'm going to call it the neutering of the Unamens. You know, here they introduce them as this sort of overpowerful, you know, they'll do whatever they want to do regardless of what the rest of the Fae decides, and the Fae has to pretty much abide by them. And I felt they got too easily dismissed, or I guess destroyed, I guess you'd say, or sucked the life out of. And so I was a little disappointed with that too. I would have liked to seen them stay around as sort of their omnipotent selves. We've had a few different cases where we seem to have these bands or groups of Fae leadership that supposedly strikes terror, or at least is, you know, will impose their will, and they either seem to disappear, go away, or in this case, you know, get taken out way too easy. So I think it's a weakness of the sort of writer's storyline. You know, we've had elders, we've had the Morgan, we've had the Ash, and now they jacked it up to the Unamens, and now they seems like they're gone too. It just doesn't, the inconsistency of the higher power of the Fae just seems to be, you know, be a little cheapened.
How about you, Edmund? What would you add to that?
Yeah, no, I'll just reiterate that this whole sequence has been feeling disjointed, and especially with this episode. I mean, I mentioned the last one that it was nice to finally get some resolution, it seemed, to the whole Wanderer and the saga on the train. But then with this one, filling in the details and connecting the dots of what she was actually doing, it felt like a bit of an anticlimax. And certainly the if you're going to introduce this new character for her to decide it's her destiny there, I really wasn't getting the sense of chemistry and that you have with the main cast. I mean, that's been the strength of the show, is about Bo and Kenzie's their sister act, and then the whole triangle with Dyson and Lauren, which is sort of still there, but they now it's as much Dyson and Lauren reacting to each other, or working together, and it feels like they're just introducing new elements for the sake of thinking, oh, we need to ramp up the drama, and they really didn't need to with the things that they'd set up, and the whole and that disjointed feeling. I mean, except
with the Unamens.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a glitch there. Sorry, but maybe start over.
Yeah.
Or somewhere in there. Pick a spot.
You agreed with everything I had to say, I think, was where Robert cut off.
Funny thing, the part that Gary remembers.
That's pretty much it. But for an episode that was trying to give us the backstory of how Bo came to this decision with Rainier, and pledged her troth to him, really felt like a bit of an anticlimax with everything they've been building up to, and the main takeaway was I just didn't feel the connection and chemistry between her and Rainier when they've got this wonderful cast that has built up all of these connections and chemistry, and they just seem to keep doing these things this season that keep them from being together and playing off each other the way we know they can do so well. And then with the Unamens being taken out so easily, and Trick rushing in right afterwards to say no, don't do that, because there's some other horrible thing that'll happen. It really does feel like just what Gary's mentioning of the revolving door of big bads. Without much being done to set them up. So I do feel that the show is getting away from some of its strengths, and it's not really helping things this season.
Oh, I'll just say once again that way too much of the let's just drop things into the storyline with no preamble whatsoever and act as if it's been there all the time. That seems to be the ongoing thing for this season, which even if it's doing fairly well in terms of the overall sense, it just seems like that is the biggest drawback. Bronstom, how about you? Why would you give this a more of an average score?
Because more than half of the running time is spent on an episodic plot that is rubbish. It's boring, it's silly, it's dull. What keeps the episode from being, average as opposed to just really, really rubbish is that they do some interesting character things with Kenzie and Dyson and Lauren in that episodic storyline with the further developing like the protagonist Kenzie that we saw at the beginning of the season, and this strange friendship between Dyson and Lauren that's been evolving, and that I just think is insanely fascinating and great to see. I do think it was a mistake to have Bo separated from the rest of the group, and I think it was an even bigger mistake to just have every it was a mistake to separate Bo from the rest of the characters and to let the thing that drove them apart, like this major development in the overarching storyline, just happened completely off screen. I also agree that Rainer feels really underdeveloped. Like, I think they're going for mysterious, but it's coming off more as who is he? What is going on? And sort of stuff like that. And it's that's sort of letting the I don't know. It's
Jon Snow has more personality at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't really know enough about the guy to make a decision one way or the other. And there's that definite sense they're doing this deliberately. They've been playing with our expectations about who the Wanderer is and introducing Rayna this way and saying, well, maybe he's not so bad, maybe it's stuff like that. They're trying to create that sense, just like, well, maybe there's something else going on. But we would need to have, a stronger sense of the character. He would need to be genuinely mysterious as opposed to bland and underdeveloped.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, that's the problem, right? That it's all tied to this... to this ridiculous idea of this destined relationship, and there's pretty much nothing about it that draws the audience into really caring about it. So, yeah, I agree with all of these points. Anything else that you guys want to add for this one, or do we move on? I think we move on. Yes. All right, that's the case then. Gary, thank you for participating this week.
Oh, pleasure as always. See you guys next show.
Absolutely. All right, and that having been said, I think then we can go ahead and say Bronstone, what do you want to cover next?
With the only other show on this list that I've actually seen, which is Supernatural.
Okay, and let's go ahead then and run the promo.
Are you actually worried about Crowley?
Tuesday, March 18th.
Find the first blade. How long is that?
They're gonna have to face it.
My king.
He's addicted.
We were counting on you
to take out Abaddon.
To blood.
What is this? An intervention?
Supernatural. All new Tuesday, March 18th.
Okay, and if you could do the recap.
Sure. Supernatural Season 9, Episode 16, Blade Runners. Crowley starts taking human blood again, and Abaddon learns of his search for the first blade. To find the blade before the Knight of Hell does, Sam and Dean enlist the help of a former man of letters.
Okay, and what would you give this one, do you think?
I'm giving this one a 7.
Okay, and Edmund, how about you?
I will go with the 7 as well.
Okay, and unfortunately, I have to do the same. Very much an average run-of-the-mill episode for Supernatural. And, why would you give it a 7, Bronstone?
Kevin Kavan Smith, the guy who played Lorne in Stargate Atlantis, was really funny. And that's why I gave it a 7 as opposed to a 6.
Oh, well, there you go. I guess
it had enough. It had enough of those moments.
Oh, we lost you there. Yep. Uh-oh. Well, okay. Edmund. That's interesting. Okay, well, the lag catches up with Bronstone. Edmund, why don't you jump in?
I think Kevin just cast a spell on Bronstone's ISP again.
Or Possibly. Google. Yeah, so Edmund, why would you give this an average?
Yeah, I would say that. Yes, as Bronstone mentioned, playing the sequestered, disgraced man of letters, he was quite a hoot, and I really enjoyed Crowley on his blood binge as well. But getting to see Mark Sheppard just go completely over the top, even more than he usually does as Crowley, as indulging in his new favorite vice was quite a bit of fun. But it felt like the Supernatural falling back on the whole quest motif again, and throwing in these couple of wrinkles around the edges of it, but it's once again, yes, we have this thing we have to get, and then we get it, and then there's a complication because he's Crowley, and so now we're back to square one again. So that part felt very, very familiar, especially with the way they introduced it with the whole Mark of Cain episode. I was hoping for a little bit more when they returned to the blade.
Yeah, I mean, from a plot perspective, I like what they're doing. I just feel like there's a certain energy missing this season, and I'm not sure why. I mean, what do you think? I mean, Bronstom, this is definitely, you haven't had the chance, unfortunately, to really jump into a lot of discussion of this particular season, but this is clearly the lowest scored season of Supernatural ever. And I feel like it's very much deserved. It just
yeah. This is the half of the.
Go ahead.
This is the half of the season where you know, in the first half of the season they did a lot of funny, silly episodes, the wacky concepts, all stuff like that. And the second half of the season is supposed to knuckle down and get into the actual plot. And instead, they're not, except for the occasions when they do, when it kind of sucks.
Yeah, and talk about the most unnecessary cameo ever. What was Snooki doing anywhere near this show?
I mean, I always suspected that she was part demonic, but it was, yeah, just something CW foisted on them, I'd bet.
It was at least four seasons too late. That's the most relevant she's been ever. It just felt so off and out of touch, and I don't know. This episode seemed like it was doing a lot of big things, especially with, like you said, Edmund Crowley and his blood addiction, and the whole thing with the first blade and the effect it was having on Dean, and clearly they're playing up this idea of the, you know, Cain and Abel and Sam and Dean, and yeah, they've got a lot going on, but I don't know, there's just a certain cohesiveness in of the quality that's just not there. And again, I don't see any names that are new in the production that would explain the difference between this and the second half of last season, where they had that really strong run of the last five or six episodes. We haven't had any streak like that this time. I mean, there's not been more than three episodes that have been above average in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's going on this season, but this was dreadfully average, which is not something that I expect out of Supernatural at all. I'm glad that they got renewed, but now I'm wondering if they're going to be able to pull themselves out of this tailspin. I'm hoping that this is just middle chapter syndrome or something. That, you know, this three-season plan, they just figured that they would have a lot more to do, and it just didn't turn out that way.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's see. Let's go ahead then and move on to our last topic here. And Edmund, let's go ahead after we do the promo, and we can talk a little Americans.
What does the center know?
Do they think any of the rest of us have been exposed?
You're still alive. That's a good sign.
Wednesday.
I want to talk about a world of unseen people.
Do you do this a lot?
The world of unseen things.
They're after bigger game.
The first step is through this man.
What's going on with you?
How's work?
The Americans. All new. Wednesday at 10 on FX.
Or in this case, perhaps a little night music. Yeah. Give us a recap here.
Yeah, no, well, Americans season 2, episode 4, as John just said, A Little Night Music. An old comrade visits Elizabeth and Philip, resulting in them embarking on a rogue mission. Meanwhile, tensions increase both at the Residentura and the FBI. And I would give this episode a 9.
A 9, okay. Let's see, I'm more of an 8, in my opinion. But, okay, a 9, let's say. Why a 9?
I liked the way, Claudia coming back. I mean, obviously Margot Martindale, you know, getting at least a little time off from that silly sitcom she's starring in, to come back to the show was a good thing. And I liked the direction it took with, Elizabeth having to then go after the Navy guy, and it may be a bit of a broken record extolling how good Carrie Russell is on this show, but she just is. So the way she played him, that whole first scene in the motel room, I was pretty sure that she was playing it the way she intended, but there was still just that little bit of uncertainty over whether she was getting cold feet for the first time ever, and but then as it got revealed that no, that was her deliberate play, I really liked the way that was playing into her own past, and the fact that her training started with this sexual assault, and her using that to her advantage in recruiting this guy, basically. But then at the same time, when kind of coming to the meeting in the car, where she basically services him, but with to advance things, returning to that cold-eyed stare over his shoulder as she's doing it. So it's a little reminder that as much as things maybe have been improving at home, there's still some issues going on there. And also on the KGB side, Oleg is turning into the interesting foil that I expected him to be, and particularly that conversation with Nina about how we have to use these emotions that should feel real, but we're having to use them to deceive. Was both adding some depth to his character and was a really good summation of what she's going through, and after me coming out saying that no, she is being all clinical about it, I'm backtracking on that a little bit, there is some emotional turmoil going on there, but also the way Oleg's being presented, it was great the way it was uncertain whether he was as she said, you know, whether you're not quite sure if he's being sincere or manipulative. So the way the complications are piling up there was just very nicely done. And and then also the scene at the bar when Stan's finally admitting to Philip that he's having this affair, but of course not telling him everything. There was some wonderful nuances and all sorts of subtext going on there, and just a wonderful reminder of just how many layers they're introducing in this. And I'll let you get a word in edgewise now.
Well, I'm just going to talk a little bit about the little things that are happening back at home, and
oh, yeah.
We've got very much an interesting side plot with Paige and her sudden interest in religion. It's somewhat of a cliche to think of the fact that, you know, the Russians were, the Soviets were the godless communists and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, it brings to mind the fact that there's a very big difference between one's choice to be, say, atheist versus the demand of the state to have no religion at all, and to paint religion as this, you know, as they say, the opiate of the masses and all this kind of stuff. And you know, she quotes it right there in the episode. But I loved the fact that there was that of all the things that Paige has done since the end of last season, the thing they find the most threatening is she picks up a Bible. I mean, it's so very much in keeping with the society that they're from and what they've been taught. And I like that nuance. And of course, if one takes into the context that, you know, one of the things that has been questionable in some circles from the Reagan era, it was the vast introduction of the religious right into American politics. It there is this kind of conflation of things going on in this particular early 80s era that makes one wonder, like, okay, you know, yes, they're overstating it to a certain point, but, you know, maybe there is a reason to feel like it's slightly threatening when it comes from certain contexts. And I just like the fact that they're just throwing it in there, because I really didn't expect them to, but it makes perfect sense. what is one aspect of American culture that would be very threatening? And that, you know, religion would be it. And not just any religion, but you get the sense that it's very much an evangelical Christian type of thing. So you don't get much more opposite from the state-sanctioned, you know, not even atheism, I wouldn't even say, but absolute no belief system at all that comes out of the communist demand and doctrine. So yeah, that I found an interesting direction for them to take, especially when clearly it's not something that they're just bringing up for this episode, but it's laying the foundation for things to come in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I had seen some of the interviews with the producers leading up to the season, promoting the season, that this was going to be an element, but I was surprised at it coming in via this angle. When we were talking about the last episode, we actually, after we got off air, I mentioned that we hadn't talked about the speculation that the young lady on the bus was actually the KGB plant, and I know that was something where I saw people commenting on that afterwards, and it wasn't something I'd gotten any sense of myself, and certainly then with this episode, both the way that storyline is going, and then they also specifically mentioning that what's Moscow doing? They had somebody on the kids, and then they pulled them. So we now know that far from her new friend representing another set of eyes on her. It is representing this whole new threat that they have to deal with. I've also, especially the fact that it does seem to be this more evangelical group, looks like it's going to introduce all sorts of in intriguing possibilities, especially if because it is hard to see, especially Elizabeth playing along with this.
Her reactions were just hilarious. Almost, it was just like,
yeah,
how can you let this happen under our roof? It's like, really? But yeah, I mean,
actually.
Go ahead.
And I should have her name on the tip of my tongue, but the young actress who plays Paige was actually live tweeting during the episode. I think it was something she retweeted from other viewers saying, you know, come on, Elizabeth, it's not like she's getting into drugs or something.
Yeah. Well, that's what, you know, but from their perspective, that's exactly how they would take it. You know, this is indoctrination, which it's so freaking ironic. Coming from the Soviets, but
yes,
there you are. But that's one of the things I liked about it. It makes perfect sense to go there. But yeah, that I think says it all for this episode of The Americans.
The one other thing I just wanted to bring up was we were dealing with the one mission, but their official mission, of course, especially for this early on in the season, I mean, admittedly, it's the shorter 13 episode FX season, but still, having the refusenik kidnapping take such a horrifically bad turn, it was quite the cliffhanger for them to end on. Even though I think it's been established that they actually have special mission cars that they usually use. During that sequence, I was thinking, it's like, oh, well, okay, Philip, I guess you're going to get that new car now. You know, it's not usually their actual personal car they're usually using for those. Having it end with them both having lost the guy and now being stuck out in the middle of nowhere with the heavily injured agent was certainly quite a cliffhanger to end on, and makes me all the readier to see the episode next week.
Mm. Okay, well, I think we're going to go ahead and take our mid-show break, and then we'll be back with, I guess, a bit of a roundtable and catch-up time with Bronstum, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, and as promised, we have a little bit of time to go ahead and talk about what we've been up to lately. And Bronstom, it's been a while since we've been able to really follow up with you like that.
And unfortunately, I believe his connection has gone kablooey again.
Oh, boy. Of course. That's the way it works, right? Well, that's okay. We'll go ahead and just carry on. So how about you, the last week or so?
Well, one thing, it's not something we discuss here, either in the show or in the quick hits, especially after some of our disappointments, or not necessarily complete disappointments, but having the finales of Black Sails be perhaps not quite what we expected. Banshee just finished up, and it did so in absolutely spectacular fashion. This was a case of far from a sophomore slump. The series just got better this season, and particularly their final two episodes just was an amazing amalgam of both. High octane action that they've become known for, and some pretty amazing character work as well, leading up to the main linchpins and villains, apparently being gone, except there was a certain comic book element here where he did certainly appear to take himself out, actually, but there is still the whole we didn't see the body, so there is a possibility that Rabbit may come back from the dead. It was just a very 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 nice wind up, and just left all of the fanshees out there just very excited to see where they're going next, and just of course as usual we're all chomping at the bit for the fact that we have to wait until next year to find out, but it looks like it's going to be well worth it. And I know as you mentioned, I mean there is the Alan Ball involvement, but this definitely seems to be a case of where his name may be on it, but it's really Greg Yatanis and Jonathan Tropper who are really really driving the show, and the decisions they've made over the way they improved it in the second season. It looks like this may be a case of an Alan Ball show that actually gained some strength rather than petering out. So that was a very exciting development. And another thing I've been hoping to bring up, and although I was hoping it'd be all four of us here or more of us here, is how good Cosmos has been in its first two episodes so far. Anyway, at the time we're recording, and I've really loved both the way that Neil deGrasse Tyson is honoring Carl Sagan in both of the first two episodes. There were very very specific mentions and shout outs, as we've come to expect from his science advocacy, the way he's just completely taking on the issues, and doing his best to fire quite a few salvos at the science deniers out there. So I've been enjoying it, and have you been keeping up, John?
I haven't. We're kind of recording it so that after this very busy last couple of weeks gets past us and I'm done with my business travel, we can kind of mainline them. But I've been keeping an eye on the reaction to it, and I've been fairly pleased so far as far as where they're going, because it seems like it's definitely in keeping with the original intent of Cosmos in terms of being a communication of these concepts to the masses. And hopefully we can get people that actually, understand what science is meant to be instead of denying it and kind of considering it to be just one point of view, just to understand the difference between the scientific method and some of the other sources of information out there, as one might say. But I would recommend it. But as you said, it's also in one of the worst possible time slots right now. It's definitely worth it. Let's see. As far as I'm concerned, not a whole lot new. Obviously, we have a lot of shows that are currently on, so it's just a matter of following up with those and keeping up with those. But I did finish reading another Star Trek book. Now I'm fully caught up. But I'm almost kind of sad that I did, because the latest one was an original series, original timeline, original series book called No Time Like the Past by Greg Cox. And this is one of the authors that, no matter, you know, there's a great stable of authors right now for the Star Wars books, but Greg Cox has been one of the more disappointing ones for me. I just don't enjoy his writing style, and I almost feel like he likes to play with continuity just to play with continuity, and it tends to be a very low-brow writing style. It almost reminds me of Kevin J. Anderson in some respects, how it can kind of play to the lowest common denominator sometimes and be very repetitive, and almost to the point where the characters seem like idiots because they're thinking the exact same thing that they were thinking three pages before, and it's like, why would you still be wondering about that? You know, like, literally things like, we're under attack. I think we're under attack. Well, that should be fairly obvious. I don't know why you're still thinking about that one over. But yeah, it just was not a particularly good book. And right now I got started on the most recent Grimm novel, which that seems to be a much more fertile ground for horror writing these days. So there's this one is, I believe it's John Passarella is the name of the author. The book is The Chopping Block, and it's already got a really nice vibe to it. Very much playing up the more horror based aspects of that particular concept and show. So I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes. But beyond that, let's see, just as we wrap up here for the week, as far as gaming is concerned, I did not have a whole lot of time for it because, again, I was traveling. But I did play a bit more of Batman Arkham Origins Blackgate, the Vita game that ties into all of that. And I'm a little bit irritated by the news that not only is the next and final Batman Arkham game going to be new-gen exclusive, so PS4 or Xbox One only. But they just announced that the new Assassin's Creed game is going to be only PS4 or Xbox One. set during the French Revolution, apparently, or at least in the general time frame, so perhaps Reign of Terror, Rise of Napoleon-esque.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Very nice.
Yes, the screenshots look very good. Lots of old-time Paris and French landscape. So from your architectural side of things, I'm sure that it would be quite appealing. But we'll see. Being on developed for the PS4 over the last 3 years, I have a feeling that this is going to look even better than Black Flag did in some of the demonstrations. So that's two of the three franchises that we said would need to be next-gen only for us to jump into it. So we'll see. Sounds like maybe I'll be keeping my eyes peeled for some good bundles towards the holidays.
I was going to say, just to clarify, and I assume some of your dismay is because you are not next-gen equipped yet.
No. We're still, I guess, previous gen. It's kind of, you know, technically they're out now, so it's, I was calling them now gen for a little while, or last gen, I guess, would be the PS3, which is what most of the stuff that I have now is on. And I mean, I have a long list of stuff I still haven't played from PS3 era, but there are those games that when they come out, I feel a desire to jump right into them, especially since it's around the holidays and they make for very convenient gifts.
Oh yes.
But we'll see. I have a feeling that was probably in the cards anyway, but maybe a little convincing to do. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter @CriticalMyth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...